All right, buddy, we are live. Welcome in. Latest episode, that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Balls on Twitter. What's up, yo, Tennessee Homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Oh, buddy. I put the basketball behind me. Not really, but kind of. I was locked in on the NCAA tournament, but... Man, I came back around to football, and I was like, my goodness, Shane, we got about 15 teams to hit on here. You know what?
Absolutely. The SEC just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and I'd like to get a shout-out to all them Vol fans and Tide fans out there making it to the Sweet 16. A&M absolutely blew their opportunity. They could have been in there as well, but – yes, there's two more teams caring about basketball. The rest of them are ready to move on.
Well, hey, before we get into that, because again, we don't know much about basketball, but one bit of news here, Shane, that was pretty interesting. I'll throw it up here. Anybody that missed it, we covered it, and there's my dog. He's fired up about it, Shane. I'm fired up about it, but we covered this a little bit the other day with Steven, but... SEC 2025 schedules have come out, and for anybody that missed it, if you're not looking at the screen, you're just listening back to the audio version here, essentially what they've done, the exact same schedule that you're going to have for 2024, for the upcoming year, they're doing it again in 2025. They just flipped the home and away game. So, for example, Tennessee goes to Georgia this year. So in 2025, Georgia will come to Tennessee. So exact same conference schedule. Thoughts, Shane, on the SEC being lazy as hell. Shane and I had nothing to do with this. We're pretty lazy, but we're not even this lazy. You know what?
Boring. That's exactly what this is. I mean, we just touted up, you know, expanding to 16 teams and all the opportunities we're going to have to see different matchups. And year two, we're already seeing the exact same schedule. I mean, that's a joke, brother. It's almost like this was sitting on someone's desk, and at the very last minute, they're like, oh, shit, that's due today, you know? Hey, throw it out there. Let's just flip-flop it this year and wait another 12 months before we revisit this. So, yeah, this was lazy. It's just terrible. It's terrible for the players. It's terrible for the fans, especially. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's still going to be great games in this thing. But Texas, an example, and I saw you and Steve bring this up, Texas A&M was it Florida? No, Georgia. Yeah, that's right. Georgia has not been there ever in College Station in the history of those two programs. So it still blows my mind. We're going to see a Texas-Georgia game first.
Right. And so many – there's other weird ones, Shane, like Florida and A&M have played four times, but three of them have been in College Station.
Yeah.
And, you know, that'll get to five and six the next couple of years with four of the six in College Station. Yeah. So it's like – what in the hell are we doing here?
A&M and Kentucky. Seems like A&M's really getting the bad end of this deal, but that's another one that it's just you're not getting to see. And then we got to wait another 12. It's like we knew Texas and Oklahoma are joining how long now? And we haven't even thought about 2025 schedule until at this moment. And we've had coach meetings. I know that they were, in my opinion, Mike, they probably had a nine-game opportunity, you know, and they had the eight. And because the nine got holes punched in it, they just quickly moved to the eight. It sounds like this was a, well, plan B type deal.
Well, I'll tell you, Shane, exactly what happened here. And again, it doesn't necessarily excuse it. And it certainly doesn't excuse being lazy and just giving us the same schedule we already have. But the issue, Shane, is the SEC said, hey, we'll go to nine, but ESPN, you got to give us more money. Mm. And currently ESPN says no, or they don't have I don't know the inner workings, yeah, whether they have the money, whether they're doing a new NBA deal or NFL, I don't know. But for whatever reason, they were not able to get the money from ESPN. So they said, all right, well, we'll stay at eight. And they want to protect these games like Alabama, Tennessee, mm-hmm, Georgia, Auburn, Texas A&M, which I get, but I think they still could have protected those games and mixed it up a little to where we get Tennessee, Missouri, we get South Carolina, Florida, South Carolina, Georgia. I mean, there's a number of ways they could have done it. And instead of just punting and saying, well, hell, we'll just stick with the exact same schedule. Right. You know, we're not getting Texas, Tennessee. We're conference opponents now. This whole deal, I was told, was that every other year you'd have an opportunity to play everybody in the conference. Well, that's out the window till at least 2026. And I don't know. Again, it comes to money. I get it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, why in the great SEC, I realize money drives everything, Shane, but why are we not giving the fans the best experience because of money? I think, again, we make so much money. I think that's a lame excuse. I really do.
Well, we didn't read the fine print, did we, Mike? Feel like I'm back at National Fitness and realize I just got 3 years of my life cemented with this company. So, right. It is what it is, Mike. There's no change. And I asked you when it first came out, you know, like, do you think there's any wiggle room? Do you think 1 to 100, is there any chance that this schedule alternates a little bit before, or do you think this is 100% all done and said?
No, it's 100%. That's why they released it. So this is what it's going to be in 2025, same as it's going to be in 2024. So if you like your schedule, if you're Mizzou, this is fantastic. If you're Florida, oh God, Billy, we'll get more to Billy in a minute, but man, it's looking rough out there for the Napier and company.
When it rains, it pours.
Yep. But hey, buddy, we got so much content to get to, and we got clips for all. We got so many clips, Shane. I had to shelve a lot of them for tomorrow. So that's just to give you an idea of what we got cooking on this show. We're going to do updates basically across the entire SEC or damn near close to it, Shane. But I got a little inside info here. And I just want to read this verbatim, Shane. This probably got sent to you because we're in a lot of the same text threads. But this is the same guy, Shane, that last year I went on this show and said, hey, he was at the practice. He says Nico's 100 times better than Joe Milton. He'd be surprised if Nico doesn't take Joe Milton's job. And that caused outrage. And then here on Vol Country about one Florida game later, everybody was calling for Nico. So, again, this is just an opinion, but this is from someone that was at Tennessee's practice here for spring camp. And you're going to like this one, buddy. That's why I'm just opening it up. And, again, this is not my words. This is directly from the text. Nico looked very good in the drills. Defensive line looked very impressive. But we had some offensive line starters out. I think the D-line is going to be very good. Ricky Gibson, sophomore corner, looked very good at defensive back. Linebackers looked much improved. Tight ends should be much better this year. The Notre Dame transfer, Holden Stays, very impressive. Out of the early enrollees, Mike Matthews, the five-star receiver, looked very impressive, made a couple great catches. The transfer from Tulane, Brazil, very quick, very fast, great hands. Lance Hurd, the left tackle from LSU, the transfer, Shane, he's a beast on the offensive line. And it looks like he will dominate once he gets more work in. The five-star defensive end, Jordan Ross, very impressive. Four-star safety, Boo Carter, looked great. James Pierce, who some people say in Shane could be the number one overall pick, he's going to be practically unstoppable. Shane, did you write this? Dylan Sampson, the running back, looks awesome. I think we will have the best defensive line, top to bottom, in the nation. Very impressed with this team. The most I have been impressed since the 90s to early 2000s. That's the end of the quote there. My God, Shay, if that doesn't get you fired up for some Tennessee football, what
God, will? We may have to pause. I need to take a cold shower after that one, Mike. Oh, man, I love it. I absolutely love it because that same enthusiasm I've heard from about seven other teams, you know. They can't all be good, but I really do hope this is the year for them Tennessee Vols, of course. But, yeah, I'm in a lot of the same threads you are. I'm hearing a lot of the same things. Of course, we're seeing the highlights, and this is that time of the year, man. You start getting that pipe dream going and praying to God they stay healthy. So, if all goes well, maybe Tennessee can make some noise this year.
Yeah, and you know, we all get excited, Shane, about transfers coming in. They're all going to be all-stars. They're all going to be the missing piece of the puzzle that gets us over the top. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes they don't live up to the hype. But I think there's also something to be said, Shane, for – and certainly NIL is a huge factor in all this, but I think there's something to be said for keeping your key players, at least the majority of them, and that is something that Tennessee – did an excellent job this offseason, but again, they hit the portal pretty active. They have one of the best NIL collectives in the entire sport. But I thought Josh Heupel took it a little bit of a step further, Shane, when he referenced just the fact that, you know, when you bring these guys in, it's really up to your, not former players, but players currently on the roster to embrace them, to get them up to speed quickly, because these guys are coming in to take reps away. So it's a delicate balance, but if you got leadership, if you've got the, you know, the right chemistry in the locker room, that's what it takes. And I just thought that was kind of interesting. So credit you, Shane. You're the one that found this clip. Let's kick it over to Heupel.
Well, Chris Braslin, how have the older guys, Squirrel Light, Brew McCoy, helped him in his transition here?
I've been really fortunate on building a culture where, you know, your vets want good players around them and want to help them grow. And that happens because of the, you know, position coaches that we have inside of those rooms, the culture that they set inside of those rooms. It happens because of the locker room. So for Chris, all the veteran guys that have been in this, one, excuse me, they help them grow just in how to play the game within the game. You know, for us, the mechanics, how to process can be specific routes, but they also help them just, you know, the culture of the building, you know, on who we need to be individually, thus collectively as a group. And our first quarter of our offseason, I said it earlier, we spent a lot of time on leadership and communication, and yet good leadership. It's got to become great leadership, and we need it to be championship leadership inside of that locker room.
Shane, is Heupel smoking? It sounds like his voice changed a little bit there, didn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was Aquaman there for a second. Oh, man. Oh, geez. I'm sorry. I kind of got lost there because it did the audio quality. So leave it to Shane. The one I download, it would sound like he's underwater there. But he says the right things. And I think it's important when you're talking about bringing some of those guys in. You're going to hear some other coaches kind of say the same thing. I remember Sarkisian for one in particular. You know, there's a culture that these schools have created. And, you know, the successful programs are the ones that when they hit this transfer portal, they're bringing kids in that will not only contribute but will fit in to the culture you created. And I think that's pivotal because there's a lot of schools that just reach out, cast a wide net, take any warm body they can get in there, and sometimes those are the ones that blow up in your face, you know?
Oh, yeah, no doubt, Shane. But, again, that ain't going to happen this year. You know why? Because they got this man named Nico, who, oh, man, Heupel's pretty fired up about Nico going into his first year as a starting quarterback at Tennessee.
You always talk about being able to take your offense and mold it to whatever quarterback you have or whatever weapons that you have. With it now being Nico's offense, where are you guys this spring in terms of building around him, experimenting with what's best for him versus what you've done in the past? Yeah. And then secondly, where is he from a leadership standpoint in your mind?
Yeah. Knowing who Nico is, but also knowing that he's still growing as a player, you know, some core principles, some things that we believe in that we feel like we need to have. We'll continue to grow in that. Some subtle things that we'll add, you know, just based off of a player that he is and how we put him in a position to be successful, but also help us grow and change from year to year too. So we'll tinker with some of that through spring ball, you know, figure out, you know, the things that we feel like are best for us collectively and for him.
and kind of hone in on those things as we get into to training camp. Quarterback position, you got the ball in your hands. Everybody's paying attention to that position. You better have some of those traits right from the jump. The hard thing as a young quarterback on the leadership side of it is you're still pushing extremely hard on the fundamentals, the growth and mastering of our offense, mastering what's going on the other side of the ball. He does a phenomenal job in one-on-one situations, communication with wide receivers after, a series, offensive line, the growth, his voice within our entire program. He's got to continue to grow in that role. That's something that is true for every young quarterback, though. Expect him to continue to mold into that.
I wonder if Heupel got hit on in the practice field or something, hit his head or something. Shady, he sounds like a wild man, doesn't
he? Yeah, no, maybe a little bit, but I'm curious. Nico never has come across to me as a rah-rah guy. Now, I may be wrong. I'm not in the locker room. I'm not in the huddles. But it just seems like, what Coach is saying is he is one of those guys that individually, after a play or something, what did you miss there? Or where did we go wrong there? That sort of thing. So more of a critiquer. But I'm just wondering, if you've got a quiet quarterback like that, what do you think has to step up? Do you think another player on that side of the line of scrimmage, or do you think this is a team effort, or do you think quiet can win games, because sometimes people need to get punched in the mouth. I'm one of those that sometimes you just got a lot of fire under my ass, and I don't know if Nico has that right now. Do you think that's something he could develop?
I mean, maybe, but I think more than anything, what is important, Shane, is just confidence and obviously what the rest of the team, having confidence in a quarterback to deliver in performance on the field. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if a guy's out there getting it done and we give him the ball one more shot, we're down 5 points with a minute left, he's going to get us that win. Yeah. I think that's more important than yelling and screaming.
Yeah, good point.
Not everybody can be Tim Tebow. Mm-hmm. And that's, you could say that in a lot of ways. But, Tebow was like the ultimate rah-rah right. guy. And I remember when he came in as a freshman, I was like, who's this damn clown? he was doing somersaults over there and firing everybody up. But then by the year when he took over, I mean, it was evident, that he was kind of the heart and soul of that team. So you could certainly do it that way too, but I'm just kind of racking my brain right now. I mean, I don't know that you necessarily need that. I think what you need is someone that delivers on the field. I think that's way more important than being a vocal. Because even guys like Tua, I never saw him really get after anyone's ass. But again, he's in the NFL for a reason. Right. He won a national championship at Alabama. I think there's just different ways to do it.
Yeah, you just knew. Your back's against the wall. You've got the best quarterback. Or in your opinion, the best quarterback in the country. So, yeah, that does speak volumes. I like that. Good point.
Yeah. Well,
that's the show, guys.
On the other end of the spectrum, Shade. Ooh, man, this guy's been talked up relentlessly this spring down in Athens. Let's kick it down to Georgia, Shane, where a little bit of bad news, though. I mean, he's fitting in. He's fitting in well. Trevor Etienne got arrested over the weekend, but I don't think that's going to derail him. I don't think that's going to cause him to miss any time or anything. We'll see what comes of it. But, that was certainly notable. But, again, Shane, I think what is more important, and I know he's a perfect example. What I was just saying about Tennessee, we all get enamored with these guys that it's like, ooh, we got a new transfer. He's going to be the missing piece. But for Georgia to win it all, win the SEC. Remember, they didn't win the SEC last year. They fell just short. To repeat, or not repeat, but 3 out of 4 national championships, Shane, I don't think it's not going to be because of ETN. Yeah. It's going to be because of Carson Beck coming back, developing as a quarterback. Let's kick it over to Kirby on Carson's growth as a starting quarterback at Georgia, year 2 in Athens.
Yeah, Coach, when we talked to Carson last week and asked him about areas of growth, he mentioned playing with more confidence. I'm curious what that looks like, what development looks like in the area of confidence, and if you've seen any, steps in growth.
Yeah, I think one of the big challenges for him is being comfortable and trusting the receivers around him. You know, he's had the fortune and misfortune of Brock and Ladd and Marcus Roseme being in the lineup, but yet he's also had the misfortune of them not being in the lineup. And as a quarterback, you know, you ask any good quarterback, they like wide receivers they trust, they know, they have intuitive ability to think the same way, and there's a lot of change in that room right now. So showing confidence in himself and showing confidence in those players to do their job and trust them is a big part of it. That trust is not given, it's earned, and they're earning his trust, and it goes both ways.
All right, and that's another thing, Shane, because I think Carson Beck gets too much criticism for, you know, not that he played a great game against Alabama, but that was the one that mattered, and they fell just short. I think it had more to do with Alabama kind of dominating on that line of scrimmage, but we like to put it on players, and it, always the quarterback. It's too much credit, too much blame. But thoughts on this, Shane? Carson Beck, if he's even better with all these weapons surrounding him and the fact that they did fall short in the biggest game of the year, you know, he's going to be driven, pun intended there, to maybe not win the Heisman or anything like that, but be the catalyst for another national championship.
Oh, I think it's all going to come down to him, just like it did with Stetson. I think, you know, that a lot of times when you look at these great teams that win national championships, very rare is it in a complete team effort. Sometimes it's individuality, and I think that's what's important with Beck here is, you know, when given the time, he had ample opportunities to win ball games, but he didn't even have all his stars all the time. You know, Brock was injured. Ladd was out. You could argue that the weapons that Georgia has now, the weapons that is around Beck is going to be collectively better than it has been the last couple of seasons. So you're curious, what does that look like and how does that turn out on the field? So I don't know. I think having that seniority, having that leadership, knowing this is your dude, I think this is a big step for him, and he came back for a reason, brother. He wants to play in the NFL, and to do that, they're going to have some stats. So I don't think they're just going to turn around and hand the ball off like a lot of people think Georgia's going to do. You know, I think that's what got him in trouble last year is because some of those games that they could have blew him out and proved to the country that they are top four teams, they didn't capitalize. And so when they lost a game late in the season, they missed their opportunity. I don't think that happens again with Kirby Smart.
Yeah. And this other clip, Shane, I absolutely love from Kirby, because while we're hearing all these coaches crying and they're all trying to jump to the NFL and NIL pushed Saban out of that game and we got to fix all this. Well, Kirby's got the opposite message, and I think this is the winning message you got to have in today's era. He may hate NIL as much as Saban, but I think you win points by having these comments that Kirby had here just the other day.
Kirby, I saw you talked in Macon last night about Nick's comments on NIL and just kind of the state of things. There was so much talk in the offseason about college coaches being wanting to move on because of everything going on. And did you have any thoughts on that? And do you have some confidence that the leaders in college athletics are going to come up with solutions that'll make it so college coaches want to stay?
Yeah, I think the leaders are going to do a great job positioning us for the future in terms of what they do. The choice of each college coach is obviously up to the college coaches. I mean, there's certainly higher stakes and higher pay than there's ever been for college coaches across the board. I mean, there's you know, the guys making money, making livings that, you know, coordinators can retire now. They don't have to go get a head job. You look back even 10 years ago, how much has changed for coaches. So there's no crying out there from my end. I want what's best for the student athlete, and sometimes I question the system we have now if it's best for the student athlete, because it's not necessarily best for the sophomore, junior, and senior. It may be best for the freshman, but it may not be best for the sophomore, junior, and senior. I would love to see a little more fair system for the players in terms of within the players. But there's not a lot of – I don't have a lot of coaches complaining, saying they want to get out of the profession. They enjoy the profession. They want the profession to be about relationships, developing talent, and rewarding positive performance both on and off the field. And that comes through what you've done in your body of work of being there, not necessarily – where it's a reverse system of the younger players sometimes get more than the older players.
That's a good point.
Right. And it, like I said, it's pretty much the opposite of what Nick Saban had to say the other day. Now, if Kirby stepped down from Georgia, not that I think that would happen, but maybe he'd be singing a different tune. But I think this is the right message to have. And I think he's going to win people over with it.
Well, I think that we're in a little bit of that bubble right now, you know, because it's easy to collect money with NIL for what can be, not what is. You know, you're not going to pay more to fertilize your lawn if your grass is perfect. You know what I'm saying? It's like you got a good thing going on. Why put more money into it when we could build on something in the future? And I feel like that's kind of where this little bubble is. And that's why I think the transfer portal is maybe a bigger deal, because now you're seeing some of these older kids that aren't getting paid being wanted again. You know, I think prime example is that kid from Oklahoma that went to Mizzou. You know, here's a guy on the roster, could have stayed there, probably would have went to the NFL, but, you know, wasn't getting the recognition he thought he deserved when maybe younger kids, quarterback, was. And so he enters portal and he finds true love again, you know. So it's like, I don't know. I think there's a little bit of that here, and we're going to have that kind of growing pain for a while. But, it's just an unusual time of football, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you mentioned Caden Green, Shane, because that's where we're headed next, Missouri, where, again, I'm going to throw up our schedule real quick here, Shane. And a lot of people anticipate big season in Columbia. And, again, flip it around. Same schedule next year, just flip away the home and away. So Mizzou comes out a big winner in this schedule reveal. But, again, let's just talk this upcoming season, Shane. And I have, again, we sit here and say 10-2, 11-1. If everything breaks right, maybe 12-0. And if we're 12-0, yeah, no issues. But I'm starting to get a little Shane. Again, we've been so praising Missouri, I have to take a little bit of a negative here. Let's say they lose at Alabama.
Yeah.
Which is not a given. They could beat Alabama. We did it the other day. I said this, you know, that would be an upset type game that Mizzou could win. But let's just say they go 11-1, and let's say they get destroyed by Alabama, which Alabama destroys a lot of people. 11-1, maybe even, I think they're in the playoff at 11-1. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Even 10-2, like if they're 10-2 with this schedule, I don't think they're making the playoff. Am I being crazy?
Yeah, I think you are, because they're starting to pick up that hype. They're going to be top 10, top 5 most of the season, unless they do something dumb. I mean, you look at A&M, you look.
Well, who cares where you start, Shane? I mean, if they go 10-2 and they lose A&M and they lose Bama. Why are they putting them in the playoff? Because they beat Auburn? Because they beat Oklahoma?
How you finish the season,
no
though.
There's no marquee wins here.
Okay, so let's just use your scenario here. Let's say they lose close to A&M. I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about how bad they win or lose here. Let's say it's close versus A&M, and it's close versus Alabama. They're in. Because as long as they beat the shit out of Oklahoma, South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Arkansas, if they could close out the November run I'm talking like they did against Tennessee, just blow them out of the water, then yes, you're talking top 12 team, two lost team from the SEC. How many of those do you think they'll be at the end of the year? So I think for sure Mizzou has an opportunity to get in. But if they get blown out by A&M or blown out by – even worse than that would be losing to Alabama big and then dropping one of those final four games. That I think November would be pivotal. I know, and it's crazy. We're in, what, March? And we're talking about they can't lose in November. But if they win out in November, I don't think you could keep them out 10-2.
Okay. Well, Cousin Rick, how about this theory, Shane? And appreciate you, Cousin
Thank you, Rick.
$20 donation. Tommy Moffitt, the new strength coach, directing the Junction Boys sequels in College Station. Giggum will result in Mizzou's first loss. Ooh, boy. Shots fired here. I like the trash talk in late March here. But, again, I just wanted to throw that out there, Shane, because I don't know. I'm a little leery that schedule could end up hurting them.
Well, Georgia, prime example last year, you know, I just told you. Yeah. But it's how you win, too. If we got a whole bunch of Florida, Kansas State-type games like we did last year, then, no, 10-2 is not going to get in there. But if you can do what we think that you can do and put some points on these boys, and I think there's no reason that Mizzou could not be in the conversation for one of the top 12 teams in the country.
Yeah. Well, one thing they've got to avoid, Shane, is people like – listening to people like us who say, oh, man, Mizzou's going to win 11 or 12 games once again. They're on the rise. They're the team to beat. How does that – you know, will that – you know, because they've always had the they've always been doubted.
Yeah.
Hell, I mean, a lot of people, they don't even belong in the SEC. And then they went out and whooped damn near everybody's ass last year. So how do they sustain that? With people are starting to buy in, that's a challenge. Yeah. And people, you know, when it's your first time doing something, it's always new. How will Mizzou respond? Let's kick it over to old Eli.
Eli, when you talk about creating that culture and kind of reinstilling that just about us mindset, just what's the process like of getting players to actually buy into it?
I think all of us at the University of Missouri have a certain level of chip on our shoulder. I think we kind of look for that in the recruiting process. And so I don't think it's hard to buy into that. I think what it's ultimately this day and age, it's about choosing unity over self and understanding that it's about the team. And while we absolutely embrace every player's individuality, we're gonna make sure that the brotherhood's more important than anything else. And so I think that's easy to do for us.
Well, I think he's also going about it too, Shane, because he says at the end of this, hey, that second portal window's coming up. We got spots available. We are going to be adding. So if that doesn't keep a chip on your shoulder, I don't know what will, because you could be replaced if you're, you know, maybe not Luther Burden, maybe not Brady Cook, but a lot of players on that team. I'm not sitting here saying they need to be looking over their shoulder, but that's what I'd be doing if the coach said that.
Well, let me ask you that, because that's the buzz I'm picking up. That second portal opens up, April 15th, somewhere around there? It's April 16th, something like that. But when it opens up, there's rumors already going around that it's going to be very, very active, and there's going to be a lot of happy coaches and fan bases, and there's going to be some pissed off ones. So I know it's early, and it's too early to tell probably, but is there a couple of teams that you're looking at that could potentially benefit in this portal? And is there some that you're like, I don't know about these two teams?
I think the number one you got to look at, Shane, is Alabama. Mm-hmm. 'Cause remember, they got a new coaching staff. They came in after the first portal, and it was essentially their roster was able to be picked apart, and they were not free to add. So they're at a deficiency right now. And, of course, we've already talked about their five-star tackle who Shane joked. Maybe he's headed back to Iowa after their social media post that they deleted. I wish I would have loaded that one up. But, Alabama, I think they're going to add several players. I'd be stunned if they didn't.
Yeah, anybody that should be worried right now?
Probably Vanderbilt. No, I'm just. No. I think, and we saw this last year, Shane. There was a lot of talk of the second window. The second window's never as big as the first one, so I think the hype is a little bit overblown. Mm-hmm. It's after spring. You'd only have a, you know, you have the summer months, but you only have a couple weeks to kind of earn your way with your new team. So I don't know. I just think there's going to be a lot less activity, and I feel like all the quarterbacks, short of maybe someone Auburn can add.
Yeah.
I think they're kind of in place. It's hard for me to envision another team that is going to add a quarterback that'll factor in as a starting quarterback.
And just to clarify, so when this spring opens up, the only ones that can immediately start, they can't transfer from SEC to SEC. Is that correct? Unless they're a graduate?
Right. Okay. Only graduate transfers.
So if SEC is going to add any, you're going to look at some other programs like an Ohio State, just other than the SEC is what where we're talking. So,
or lower level competition type players. Right. And then this other clip, I just thought, you know, sometimes drink is good for a little gem here, Shane. A little bit long, but here's on building, you know, learning along the way, building Mizzou into what it is. It was not always at this level. I really like this clip.
You said on an interview last night with Josh, you were talking about having to learn specific parts of every different job, right? How every place is different.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you can explain kind of what you had to learn about here and, you know, any specifics, and how long do you feel like it took you to embrace what's different about here than maybe some other place?
Yeah, you know. Well, no, you have to embrace for sure. I think that's a great question. I think really when I look back at that, it's really I tried to take the blueprint of what was successful for me at Appalachian State and apply it to the University of Missouri, and that didn't work because it's different places. There was a different culture in place. There was a different set of realities that were in place. There were different players in the locker room, different mentalities of what football was. And so it took me a little bit of time to realize that, oh, wait, what I did there, the way I communicated, the way I acted, the way we led there isn't exactly the same way of how it's going to fit here. You know, as far as some of the realities of Mizzou that I had to embrace, obviously I knew and was stated even in my opening press conferences, I knew we had to recruit the state of Missouri better than we ever have. And I tried to do that and still try to do that even being in St. Louis yesterday, embracing the past with Coach Pinkel and understanding his significance to our program and even the past players that are significant to our program. I think we've done a really good job of that. But understanding different dynamics. You know, there is a different dynamic to the University of Missouri with sharing the state with professional sports teams, and how do we win from within first? How do we win within the first 100 miles of Columbia to get our fans in the stands first? And then how do we go and attract the fans from St. Louis and Kansas City and Springfield and the Boot Hill? And understanding that there's really seven different geographic regions in the state of Missouri, it's really not, I mean, there's seven unique places in this state, and they're all different. You have to reach each one in a little bit different manner. Understanding that rural Missouri is really the spirit of Missouri. Understanding that you can't lump Kansas City and St. Louis into one. They're two distinctly different places and have a little bit of a sibling rivalry with each other, and that's part of it. I have a little bit of a sibling rivalry with my siblings. So, but how do we all come together to unite to represent this state in a real way? And I think when we won the Cotton Bowl, and whether you fly out of Kansas City right now, or you fly out of St. Louis, or you fly out of Columbia, every one of the shops has Missouri gear. And that hasn't always been the case when I've been here. And so that signals to me progress in what we're trying to accomplish. Pride in our state, pride in the state university, pride in the flagship football program. So just learning those different things. Those are different nuances that you just don't know when you step foot into the ground, you know. You step foot here, you think, oh, shoot, we're just going to win. It's hard to win. It takes a lot of things to come together. It takes a lot of people working together. And slowly but surely, we're doing that. You know, we had a saying all spring, little by little becomes a lot. I feel like that's kind of – it resonates with me because there were daily battles that we had to win that have little by little you start looking back and you say, okay, it's coming together in a big way now.
Uh-oh. Yeah, see, scan it. No source detected.
That got to me, Shane. It was so emotional, I had to turn the camera off for a minute. But, again, I think there's something to be said for that, especially if, again, you look at the schedule. I know I was Debbie Downer there for a minute, but I think Mizzou's going to win 10 or 11 games again. They got the schedule again next year. They could do it again. I mean, they could be on an epic run here that had the fans – had the school not given him time, had the fans not, I mean, the fans were on, he was on thin ice with the fans. Point being, Shane, I guess sometimes maybe we need to be a little patient. Yeah. And maybe Billy Napier breaks out or Shane Beamer or, you know, Sam Pittman. It could be a lot of these guys. Drink could be the perfect example for let's not run someone off maybe a little too quick, because they damn near did.
No, and it's tough. It's tough to create that environment that he's trying to do. And but they're on the right path. You keep winning, you keep being exciting, the state will rally. And you see this with multiple fan bases throughout the decades, Mike. You know, I remember the 90s, the 2000s. It's like I saw more Florida bumper stickers than I'd like to admit floating around here in Knoxville. You know, they were there
right.
because people like winners. And then you know, you've seen it with Auburn when they had Cam. It's like all of a sudden that Auburn, now they're the, you know. So it's just it's tough. You're in a bubble, and you've seen many, many times you've gone up, you've gone down, but this is the highest Mizzou's been in a long, long time. And to stay on top of that mountain, you got to keep your foot on the gas. You can't be. I mean, this rat poison that's coming out. You know that hey, the 10-2. There's a chance to make the college football. If you buy into that, and then you hit a 9-3 or an 8-4, buddy, they're off. They're off the wagon again.
Yeah. Well, man, that was a horrible transition, Shay. Because next we got Steve Sarkisian down there in Texas, and I was going to say, if you thought you saw a lot of Florida bumper stickers, wait till you see Texas. All these damn Texas bumper stickers, because according to Sark, this is the deepest, most talented, most veteran NFL-ready team he's ever assembled. And if that's true, maybe Texas is going to come in here and dominate
the
SEC. By God,
the SEC ain't ready.
After one practice, but I thought that it was pretty evident that the energy was really good out there at practice. It was pretty evident the amount of depth that we have. I mean, this is the most numbers that we've had in a spring practice since we've been here. And, I think that's a combination of a few things. I think the transfer portal has affected that, where you can have guys, kind of replace players right away. I think that's a byproduct of so many early admits, guys coming mid-year. And in the end, the fact that we were able to two-spot all of our team stuff in practice, and that we were able to go ones, twos, threes, and fours, and everybody on the team getting reps and improving and getting better. I thought the coaches really, demanding the fundamentals, the techniques that are needed in all three phases, offense, defense, and special teams, was evident as well today. But again, there's a ton of things that we need to get better at and we need to work on. But for a first day, spring practice, I was definitely pleased.
Well, Shane, if he's right, I'm going to look like one of the biggest idiots on the internet, which I'm used to doing. But again, you hear comments like this is not just fanboys. It's not just, the beat writers. Now you got the head coach who just won the Big 12 for the first time under Sarkisian, first time in over a decade. And then, whipped the hell out of Alabama in Tuscaloosa. He's basically saying this team's a hell of a lot better than that team. What's your thoughts, man? I mean, how good could Texas be in the SEC?
Undefeated. I mean, I'm like the opposite of you, Mike, because when they come out and you're talking about how deep, that's the key, Mike, to make a run in the SEC and potentially pull off a 12-0, 11-1, even a 10-2. You can't just do that with a handful of great guys. You have got to have a lot of bodies or just a blessing, that they stay healthy. And when you talk about Texas, I'm hearing some of the biggest, baddest defensive linemen you've ever seen. You talk about the transfer portal. Every single one of them was God's gift to football, and I can't believe they landed in Austin. The quarterbacks, you talk about a quarterback room. Yours looking good. Manning's putting on weight. It's just nonstop, So I'm kind of buying into that hype. I may be wrong. It may be egg on my face here, but I do think that Texas has a real opportunity to make some noise, especially their first year in the league.
Yeah, and I do think there's something to be said, Shade, for coaches that are pursuing it, that know – I'm not saying the window's closing, because it could just be opening for Sark and company. But, again, they came up just short last season. I thought they'd beat Washington. And hell, if they faced Alabama in the national championship, I would have had great confidence that they would have won that game after seeing that initial showdown. Now, I don't know how they would have done against Michigan, but point being, Shane, is it's almost feels like they let a national championship potentially slip out of their fingers. And the way they're recruiting, the way their NIL's running, the way they got some of the same as we said with Tennessee, they got some key players to return to Austin this year. You know, they're all in as well. And when your head coach says he's obsessed, I think he's talking about we're so close. We can taste it, but we just got to get over that hump. And Sarkisian explains why that's his theme this offseason, obsessed.
You mentioned the word obsession on a post this morning. How do you define that word? And what positives do you see in the word obsession? And then what negatives maybe come along?
Yeah, no, I think being obsessed is something like, man, you got to love what you do. You're obsessed with what you love to do. You have confidence in what you're doing. You do it in the absence of fear. You're committed to the cause. You're committed to what you're doing. And ultimately, you know, the positive of that is that you're striving towards something and that you're committed to it. The negative with it comes that you go overboard with what you're trying to do. And so the challenge for us is being obsessed with this mission that we're on, but yet make sure that we're finding balance in our lives and that we're, you know, we're committed to the classroom. We're committed to who we are as people as much as we are committed to being the best football players that we can be.
He had into that last part, Shane. I was right there. I was going to say Texas undefeated SEC champs. Now 9-3.
Oh, man. I liked the little chair comment. I didn't, you know, I'm sitting on some phone books here just so I can be the same size as Mike. But I don't know, brother. I'm buying into the hype again. And it may backfire on me, of course. But here's another team, similar to what I said with Mizzou, that the fans mm-hmm. are so hungry. They're like, they got to go to a college football. They were one game away from a national championship. It's been a while. And now they're picking up steam. They're now in the SEC. I just feel like the money is like, you think they made a lot of money last year. You just keep waiting. The SEC money coming in, the boosters that are pumped up. This is a program that has all the pieces to make national championship runs. But I do think a lot of it hinges on this first season, and Sark's got a lot of pressure. I don't think he's going to get fired or anything, but there's a lot of pressure to come over here and perform immediately. And if they don't and walk away with a 8-4 season like Mike thinks they're going to do, you know, then all of a sudden it's like, well, is Sark our guy?
Right. Well, they're not asking that question right now in College Station, Shay, because Mike Elko's undefeated. Every time you get a new hire, guy's going to be great. I actually do think Mike Elko will be great. But I'm liking what I'm hearing already. It's not the same Jimbo fast-talking, running new schemes here. We'll get to the offense in a second. But I love the fact that when Elko was at A&M, the defense was elite. He goes to Duke, and he elevates them immediately. If he can have that type of impact in College Station, there's a big reason why fans are so hyped about what A&M could be under Mike Elko. Let's kick it over to them as they just opened spring here recently.
You mentioned focus on fundamentals in the spring. I'm wondering, when you have so many newcomers from portal and early enrollees, does that change how you approach things and just how much more competition do you think this spring will have compared to most springs?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We talked about that on Monday as a team. You know, healthy competition is what creates growth in everyone, in every organization, everywhere you are, right? The idea that I'm a little nervous that if I don't do it to my best ability, somebody might get to do it for me, I think is some sort of motivational factor for everyone, not just our players, literally everyone in life. And so I think it's natural when you're new and it's a new staff for it to feel as though every job is open and is open for competition. I think even as we build this program to where we want it to go, and we did this, you know, in year two at Duke, you know, every job needs to be open every spring. and it has to feel that way, and it has to be real competition, or else it's really, you're not getting the growth within your program that you need to have. And so, you know, we want our guys to go out there and compete. We want nobody to be settled in the role that they're in. We don't want anybody to just go, oh yeah, I'm a backup, that's cool, like, because I don't think you get better as a program, as an individual, as a unit, as a team, if that's the mindset. And so, you know, and that's on us as coaches to create those opportunities. If we roll out the same starting 11 for 15 straight practices, then we're not creating competition. And so, you know, I know from my time here in the past how much everybody loves to write depth chart stuff. You will not be able to figure out this depth chart, I can promise you that. It'll be all over the place all spring as we try to figure out who the best 11 players are and what roles people are going to have moving into the summer.
I just want you to know, Shane, I am actively and always looking to replace you. So think of that competition next time. I want you to keep getting better at this.
Yeah, just every opportunity is open. I will say this. I like that. And then that's one thing that you see sometimes with a new coach in a program. You know, we've all seen Texas A&M here for the last several seasons. You know, we know every year it seems like we've talked them up. This is their year. They're going to be better. And then something – then it's like the same thing happens over. It's like the definition of insanity, you know. You just do right. The same thing over and over and expect different results. And I'm not going to mention Jimbo too much this year, but by God, I'm glad he's gone, because now we've got new eyes on the program and open competition, because there may be a couple of dudes that you weren't expecting to be immediate impact players that will become that because they were given an opportunity that maybe they didn't receive under this last regime. So I'm pumped up for the new chapter of A&M, but it's with all those port transfers coming in, with all I mean, there is going to be a juggling act for a while, like you said, to find that top 11. There will be some growing pains in that schedule. You know, it's not favorable, especially right there out of the gate, like you're looking here, Notre Dame, August 31st. They're thrown right into the fire, Mike.
Right. And did it surprise you at all, though, when we saw these over and unders that it is 8.5? Because it's like, that would be Jimbo's best season, hitting that over. You know, I mean, and he was there for 6 years.
It almost feels like 8.5 is something that you and I would have said, but Vegas came out with 6, you know? So the fact they're coming out this high, I mean, that should give you a little confidence as an Aggie that this season may not suck as bad as we thought, you know. And I don't think A&M is afraid that they're going to just fall flat on their face right out of the gate, but we all know there's going to be a little bit of that growing pain. And we just hope that they find their footing quicker in the season than later.
Right. And so the big question right now in College Station, Shane, what is this offense going to look like? Elko also in his presser, he kind of came out and said, Connor Wigman's our QB1, but he's not 100% healthy. He can't do everything we need him to do running the football. So I would say there's a window for someone to steal the job. And hell, he just said competition, competition, competition. So they're not going to just give him the starting role, but what will this offense look like? I'm fascinated to see under Colin Klein, who played at Kansas State, nearly won a Heisman at Kansas State. That's where he was the offensive coordinator. But the fact they were able to steal him away from a very winning program in that conference, I think that gives you an indication of what they know the ceiling is of this Texas A&M team. But here's Mike Elko on what the offense is going to look like under Colin Klein.
Speaking of schemes, you're going to be followed by your coordinators, and thanks for making your coordinators available to us. But what kind of schemes can we expect from the defense and the offense, particularly the offense coming from Kansas State? Is that going to be a little bit like the Kansas State offense that Klein ran there? Just what about your two schemes?
Yeah, this I think is probably a great time to have this conversation, because you'll get tired of me saying it as we move forward together. But, you know, schemes are so overblown in terms of what they actually are and mean. So what do I mean by that? You know, we run a 4-2-5 on defense. There's probably 50 programs in the country that run a 4-2-5 on defense. If you went to any of the 50, they wouldn't have any carryover. Like, and so what we do is different than this school's 4-2-5 is different. Like, there's no way to put schemes into these tight, neat little packages for the media that everybody wants him to be in. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just a reality of football. And so, we talk more about core values and what we want it to look like. So we spend time on philosophically, defensively, what do we want to be? We want to be a group that can attack. We want to be a group that can dictate to the offense. We want to be a group that tackles well, plays extremely physical, communicates at a high level, doesn't give anything away, forces the offense to earn everything. Offensively, we want to be multiple. We want to be a group that can switch tempo. We want to be a group that can attack a defense, can feature our playmakers, can move people around to create the matchups that we want to create in order to be successful. That's how we talk about scheme. Everybody wants it to be, are you going to spread or are you a power? Everybody wants it to fall into these neat little tied up bow packages. I just don't think that's the reality of it. And so as we try to develop this honest relationship as we go through this, I just think that's the reality of what it is. And so, obviously, we're going to put those coordinators in front of you so that you can ask the specific questions of them that you want to ask, and not because I'm deferring or deflecting. But, when we talk in terms of, okay, hey, we're going to go hire an offensive coordinator, what are we looking for? I'm not looking for a guy that runs a certain style of offense. I'm looking for a guy who understands how to use our personnel, how to match people up, how to attack a defense, how to effectively move the football year to year, not just when we have the best talent in the world.
Yeah, that's great, Mike, but what kind of offense are we going to be running? please, God, just answer that question. If I was there, I probably would have asked that. I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. But what kind of offense?
Well, we know what kind of offense they're running at Oxford, Shane. Thanks to Lane Kiffin and Jackson Dart back together for year three with the all-in year, so to speak. Let's kick it over to Kiffin on Jackson Dart coming back and being a key recruiter out of the portal. I this was news to me, but I thought this was pretty cool.
Has brought in the top transfer class in the country. I think Jackson announced his decision to come back on New Year's Day. Did his decision change the way that you guys attacked the portal at all this offseason, or did you guys have a game plan regardless of what he did?
Yeah, we had a game plan. Him coming back didn't really change what we were doing, but, I kind of mentioned it, I think, on the radio show, before that he was coming back, and then kind of took that back because that really isn't my my responsibility or my job to say that, so left it up to him. But I kind of knew he was coming back, obviously, and, he recruited like he was coming back and helped put together his team. So I actually don't know that I've seen over time a player actively recruit more to put together a team on both sides of the ball than Jackson did this offseason. So, says a lot about him, as a leader. And I've even said potentially someday as a head coach if he wants to be, because he has a really special qualities, and one of them is to get people to follow him.
All right, and then, one thing, that they didn't mention it here, but I think I've talked about this before, but I think it'll be very advantageous to Jackson Dart in particular, but, all of Ole Miss, the fact that they have this in-helmet communication now. Because of the way Lane Kiffin sees the game, the way he calls it, he'll be able to communicate with Jackson Dart. I think that is not being discussed enough to where there's a handful of teams. Sark, another one at Texas. Heupel, Tennessee. Lebby, Mississippi State. I mean, some of these guys, I think, are going to have a real, real advantage having the ability to speak to their quarterback on the field, play in and play out.
Yeah, I do too. But I also think about, like, Elko in defense. Could you imagine a linebacker having your defensive coordinator in your headset, saying, hey, because I remember there's several games, coaches yelling on the sideline trying to get their boys in the right position, and now you can say it. So I think there's going to be advantages throughout. And that's one of the things we're not clipping here, but just about every coach was asked about the headset. Some of them are still like, hey, we're still trying to work the bugs out and things like that. But you could see a few of them you know, kind of got that, this is going to be good. This is going to be good for us. And so I think Lane Kiffin especially is going to I mean, he's already implemented. They're ready to rock and roll down there in Ole Miss.
Right. And you know, he made waves, Shane, after they lost to Georgia. Yeah. We don't have the players. And he's one of the very few that's not got blowback on it. But now he says, hey, guess what? We do got the players. Let's kick it over to Kiffin one more time.
I know it's early, but what are your first impressions of the portal guys and then the freshmen like Cam Franklin, guys that came in that semester?
Well, I mean, that's a lot of guys, so I don't even know the number, but it's probably 25 guys combined between portal and high school guys that are here. So there's a lot of guys doing a lot of things. I feel like the offensive guys, not as much, and a couple of them have injuries. Like Juice, like Diego, and so they're not participating. But defensively, when you look out, there's a lot of new guys. You know, kind of we were talking this morning, and somebody was talking about, well, this player playing this, and I reminded them, hey, guys, like, I don't care who plays, where they're from, what year, the things you guys have heard before, we're going to play the best players because, you know, I get really – feel really good when we win and feel really bad when we lose. So I'm never going to – play somebody because they were recruited here or this many years or from whatever state, any of that. So I say that with these guys because I think they know that. And I think that that's part of why they come here. But also in that I said too, reminding them like how much despise losing and that feeling of Georgia. And we try to teach our players like things happen for a reason. There's always good and the bad. And the good that came out of that game, if you guys remember afterwards, sitting there kind of, you know, that feeling like, hey, when I said it, it wasn't a knock on our players as much as it was on myself as a coach. We got to recruit better because they didn't look like us in that game, and especially in our front seven on defense and our offensive line. So I think when you go out there and look, I think you see a glaring difference in our offensive line and the size and our front seven on defense. So I contribute that to us recruiting really well in the portal and really that feeling after that Georgia game, and actually the feeling during the game.
All right, Shane. So they're even better. Of course, everybody's even better in the offseason, you know what? But legitimately, they added so many pieces. They're bringing guys back. But this is what's confusing me. The 9.5 over-under for the Ole Miss Rebels after winning 11. Now, I realize the bowl game doesn't count for these over-unders. But so it'd be under 10 if you know, the over-under. I mean, and you look at this schedule, Shane.
Yeah.
You get no Alabama. That's been the thorn in your side. You don't have to face Nick Saban. Georgia, you get them at home at least. You know, even the rivalry, Mississippi State, you get it at home. Oklahoma, one of your bigger games, you get it at home. I get LSU on the road. But beyond that, I think Ole Miss will be favored in all the road games. And heck, they may even be favored at LSU. I don't know. But I'm trying to figure out why this is so low, and let me pose it to you like this, Shane. Is it because there's a threat or a danger that this could all implode, Shane? Because we're all in. We're adding all these free agents, and maybe, you know, you lose to Kentucky or South Carolina, and all of a sudden some of these guys start eyeing the NFL, or they ain't bought in, or they're distracting, or this, that, or the other. I'm just stunned. I mean, this feels like free money right here at 9.5.
It really does, Mike. And you know, good news is I get to have that same schedule next year. so I think it is. I don't know. I'm liking the over on this one, and because a little bit of that buying into the hops. Yeah, could you find a loss or two in there? Absolutely, but three. You know, I don't know. I think that this team, short of imploding, I guess that would hit the nail on the head there. It's like these kids came there to win the SEC. Those kids came there to win the playoffs and go to the NFL. You know, this is a launch pad for them. And right now, everything's roses. But you drop one to an LSU, then things get a little dicey. If you drop another one – to an Oklahoma that you were expecting to win, then all of a sudden the wheels start to come off. So I could see that scenario playing out, but I don't know, man. I think you got one of the best quarterbacks in the country here. You've got plenty of talent, and one of the biggest factors that Ole Miss has suffered so long was on the front seven, and you just heard the ball coach come out and tell you they look 10 times better. So I don't know. I don't know how many 10-win teams can make it to the playoffs, but it seems like just about every SEC team we've covered, I've convinced myself they have that opportunity, which means there's going to be some butthurt programs for sure.
Right. Well, one shade where, again, if a quarterback emerges, they could be one of the biggest surprises in the entire SEC. And I'm talking the South Carolina Gamecocks. Shane, let's kick it over to Shane Beamer. Thoughts on the quarterbacks to open spring with Lenore Sellers. So much hype around this young guy. And then they brought in Robbie Ashford. They still got Luke Doty, who's playing all over the field as an athlete. Let's kick it over to Shane Beamer.
Quarterbacks this morning. A lot of newness. You know, you think about it, Luke was working at receiver, but primarily, but a little bit of quarterback. So when you think about it from that standpoint, Lenoris was the most experienced guy as far as taking quarterback reps at a Carolina practice. You know, Robbie Ashford never had, Davis Bevel never has, Dante Reno never has. So there was a little bit of trying to, you know, figure out what they're doing and nerves. But, you know, when they did know what they were doing and could execute, they performed well. You know, I think they're athletic. We've got some bigger guys out there. Robbie's a big kid, and Lenoris obviously is a big guy as well. Davis has size, so the size jumps out at you. And then, you know, they're athletic, and they can make throws. So, it was rusty out there today for sure with it being practice number one, but a lot of upside in that group, and they'll continue to get better. And there's good competition. You know, last year in that room, everyone knew that Spencer was the guy, and now it's a very competitive room as well, where they're all competing and trying to make each other better, but they're all trying to be the guy as well. So that's been fun to watch also.
Now, I really wanted to play that clip, Shane, for one important reason. We get stuff like that where you got a number of quarterbacks, competition. You know, that I get it. That's coach speak. Yeah. But, and then you look at someone like Arkansas with their transfer, Taylen Green from Boise, who everyone I talked to, Shane, said, he's your starter. I mean, it's the competition's over. It's just a matter of time before they name him the starter in Bobby Petrino's offense. Does it give you more confidence in a team like Arkansas, where it was a question mark, and they have, you know, an obvious answer? Or would you prefer a South Carolina where maybe we got two really good options and these guys are going to battle it out? I mean, I don't know. South Carolina can name a starter tomorrow for all I know, but I think more than likely it'll probably rage on into fall. I guess what I'm really trying to ask you, does your perception of a team or maybe just an offense, does it change when you know that they have a starter on hand?
A little bit, Mike, because the one thing that drives me nuts is, and I told you I wouldn't talk about Jimbo, but Jimbo, you know, how many times is he's like, hey, we got a quarterback race every season. We got a quarterback race. And then you feel like some of those reps were getting squandered during the offseason. And that's my only concern is to figure out if Touchdown Robbie or Sellers is the guy. You got to give them reps with the ones, which means the other guy's losing those reps. So part of me is a little, you know, kind of reserve when it comes to that. But the unique thing about this team in particular is they have shown that quarterbacks can still play a role. You look at Joyner, you look at Doty, you look at some of these guys that come in, even though they may not have been QB1, they still found opportunities to get on the field and be productive. And Touchdown Robbie, even if he doesn't win the job, I still do think there'll be packages just for him, especially near that end zone. So I'm not at all turned off by this, but I am – you know, you can't waste too many. I need like a 90-10 split, you know, like Sellers is our guy, you know.
Right. And who knows, Shane, but because we've only seen one season of Dow Loggins, and it was basically the Spencer Rattler show, and he was fantastic. Yeah. But maybe they want, you know, they may have been in a unique place, Shane, where the quarterback's too damn good to take off the field. Mm-hmm. But maybe Dow Loggins really wants a running quarterback.
Yeah.
And if you have Sellers, if you got Robbie Ashford, you throw in Luke Doty, all tremendous athletes. I'm not saying they're better than Spencer Rattler, but maybe they fit it better and what the scheme is intended to be. It's valuable to have multiple guys like that because, God forbid, one of them gets hurt. This is the SEC, Shane. You run your quarterback a ton. That is a serious risk week in and week
out. That's a great point, Mike. And I think that's why we didn't see that much Sellers last year, because it's a huge difference, you know, between what he brought to the table and what's his name brought to it. It's just there's just two different style quarterbacks. Now you've got three guys that potentially could run the offense. They don't have to change anything. And if one guy does get banged up, you've got another guy that's fully capable to step in. So, yeah, many, many years have gone through the SEC, and many, many times we've started with a quarterback and didn't end with one. And I hope that doesn't happen to any of the programs. But if it does with South Carolina, I don't think the drop-off is going to be as big as some of these other schools.
Yeah. Well, Shane, hey, we've gone over 70 minutes here. And I got about enough content to go for another 70, so I think we're going to cut this one short. Shane's got a job. He's got a life to get back to. But we will be loaded, Shane, with a lot more content on the next episode. And I've also, I haven't even shared this with you, but a ton of quarterbacks have spoken this spring, so I'm going to start going through their comments, so we'll have even more for the next episode. Apologies to the teams that we didn't get to. We'll start with those on the next episode. But you got anything before we hop off the line?
No. Again, it was awesome to get some football content. And I know a lot of boys and girls out there were itching for it and wonder where we're at. But, you know, at March Madness, there's something about it. It's just fun. I'm not a huge basketball fan. But in March, by God, I'm watching it with everybody else until Tennessee loses. So, which they almost did. Thank God Texas didn't have three more minutes in that game, or we didn't shoot one more damn three-pointer. But anyway, I digress. It was good hanging out with you, Mike. It's good having all the listeners. If you're not subscribed, be sure to jump on YouTube. You know what else helps? Is hitting that like button. If you close down the chat room, you hit the like button, you can jump right back in the chat room. Those likes help us out as well. So I appreciate everybody that's put in the effort, and I look forward to some more content tomorrow, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, apologies. I didn't realize how – well, I kind of figured this would be a long one, but then I looked down. I was like, my goodness, Shane, this is about to be a three-hour Joe Rogan if we go through all this. So I do apologize for that. Again, we'll have a loaded show tomorrow, but I appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out, especially those on the live show. That means a lot, and I appreciate you, buddy. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols. Beat Creighton. Creighton. Where the hell is Creighton anyway?
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.